Welcome to the CCHA show, getting ready for the Mason Cup Championship. And there's no better folks to talk about that than with our two favorites here, Jared Robedo from the Bemidji Pioneer.
Hey, Perry. How are we doing?
Great. I know you're dealing with weather temperature in your area, but...
yeah, no, we're fine.
You're going to make it? All right.
Yeah, we'll make it.
We're making it. Trent Singer from Sioux Falls Live, who is looks like his dwelling looks like to be the right temperature.
Yeah, no, it's nice and cozy down here. I mean, but I don't have to deal with the temperate nature of Bemidji, Minnesota, no. And you know, we're a little bit more of the
yeah. It's 30 degrees. Like this is a fine day in Bemidji. Like we're fine. I left my windows open when I went to Mankato last weekend. It came out, it was like 45 in my apartment.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, I
you're still evening it out, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so then I turned the heat on. I woke up this morning. It's 78 degrees, and we got...
You have a thermostat, or you just, like, turn the heat on?
He plays roulette with the thermostat, is what it is.
No, I turned it up and I was tired. I fell asleep and I woke up and it's hot in here. So.
Okay.
This is obviously the most important thing to talk about in the CCHA this week.
What's going? Yeah, what's even?
There's only one game this week, so we can.
And it doesn't even count.
We can waste 10 minutes to talk about the temperature.
Jared's temperature, yeah.
Yeah. No, we do have exciting hockey to talk about. Let's get to last weekend, actually, because there's actually two games. And the first one was St. Thomas, the early game, St. Thomas taking on Bowling Green. Pretty tight first period, no goals in it. As we expected, we talked about, actually, the guys on the broadcast did a good job talking about how Bowling Green's been so stifling defensively in the opening periods of games. But Tommy's breakthrough in the second... He kind of felt like in both of these games, maybe the first team to score would have a distinct advantage. And the Tommies did score first, Casey Leyland scoring. But then 3-1 was the final. Let's go Trent here first. We'll get Jared first cracks at the Beavers there.
Yeah, I 3-1 was the final, but it was a tighter game than that. They got the empty netter at the end. Bowling Green had a really good opportunity at the end of the game, too, with went on the power play with like a minute and a half left. And then they pulled the goalie. So they had a 6-on-4 opportunity at the end, which was, you know, obviously a good scoring opportunity. But the problem was it allows you on the defensive end to just throw the puck down the ice and not take any icing. So they eventually got one with Cooper Gay. And that was pretty much all she wrote. But it was... I watched this game, towards the... I think I watched the third period, went and saw Mickey 17, shout out, really good movie. And then when I got home, finished off this game and then watched the evening game. Liam Malmquist, though, with a goal and an assist again. Lucas Walling picks up an assist. I mean, it's just, if you're St. Thomas, it's these same names that we've been saying throughout the entire second half of the season. And at big moments, you know, this is kind of everything for them right now. They're playing for their Super Bowl, their national championship right here this weekend. And so I just really like the way they're playing. They've won 8 in a row now. This team's really, really clicking. Jake Seibel has just been unreal too. Just can't be beat. He just cannot be beat in the net. And he's going to, you know, they're going to get a good test this weekend, but I like the St. Thomas team. I think Rika Blasi's got them humming at the perfect time. These are the two winningest teams in the conference too, that'll be playing in the championship game. But, a great season for Bowling Green too. I want to give them their flowers. They were right in this game too. They gave themselves as much of a chance as they could. Ultimately just wasn't enough. Christian Stover, who we had on the podcast last week, actually, Jared, played a solid game. I thought Stover was really good in this game and made some big saves early on. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough if you're Bowling Green, but they're going to lose a lot of guys from this team. This is a pretty good-sized senior class. They also bring in a ton, though, and they have one of the best recruiting classes in the country, currently ranked number two right now by Neutral Zone. And I think this Bowling Green team has to be more than happy with what they've kind of gotten from Dennis Williams in year one. You know, hats off to them. Just a truly solid season. They finished with 18 wins too. It was a fun semifinal. I thought St. Thomas though was ultimately the better team though, and I think the better team won this game.
Jared?
Yeah. St. Thomas is like arguably one of the hottest teams in the country right now. It does feel like, and well, obviously Minnesota State won its semifinal game too, and we'll get to that in a second, but it feels like we are getting the two best teams in the CCHA, at least the teams that are playing the best right now. There's no doubt Mankato has been the best pretty much all year, and I think that second spot has kind of been up for grabs for most of the season. For a while, it was Augustana, turned into Bowling Green for a little bit, turned into Michigan Tech for a little bit. But I think when the dust settled, it really is St. Thomas and kind of that upper tier with Minnesota State. And it is because of all those guys we've talked about since the second half. It's getting scoring from depth like a Casey Leyland in a big game like that. I'm so impressed with their penalty kill and how it's kind of evolved throughout the year, too. It's had some moments where it hasn't been great, like – structurally it something seemed missing in the first half. I think that was kind of granted, you know, they were pretty undisciplined in the first half with all the major penalties, but I think when you spend that much time on a penalty kill, you can kind of, it's easier to get out of structure, and that's where it started to bite them in some of the bigger non-conference games in the first half. How they've found their rhythm in the penalty kill and how it's essentially turned a defensive situation into an offense. I mean, they are so aggressive and they use their speed so well. And Liam Malmquist has four shorthanded goals this year. And the way they're just able to hound defensemen and hound trailing, you know, forwards in the neutral zone, it's so impressive. And, I'm very curious how that plays against a Minnesota State team, which is a very aggressive power play. So that's the part that sticks out. As for Bowling Green, right, I mean, I think, you know, it probably hurts every year when you see that graphic pop up that's like only one NCAA tournament appearance since 1990. Like, that is a long time to have only one. But the program is going in the right direction. I don't know how much more you could have asked for after, you know, with a first year head coach. Obviously you'd like to win that game to give yourself a shot too, but, you know, kind of considering where this team was at the start of last season, you know, this is a pretty impressive run here in the past 2 years with what they've had to deal with. And you're going to have to replace a lot of really important pieces, but the pieces you got coming back too are pretty solid. And the most important one is that head coach, Dennis Williams. I mean, he is awesome. He is the real deal. And he's made it at every single level as a head coach. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what kind of players Bowling Green brings in next year with their CHL kids, because it really could be a boom or bust year in terms of, is it a rebuild or a retool? Because if you get a few of those kids to hit and hit right away, I mean, Bowling Green could be right back in that semifinal next season.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, a lot of the veterans are losing, and Ethan Scardino scored a big goal for them in that game that tied it. And it, you know, gave them some hope there, I thought, in that middle period. Obviously, Stover. But you saw what you had from obviously Moore last couple of years when he was kind of forced into action. But he's a big athletic and talented goalie as well. So they have that in their back pocket, right? Where he wasn't the guy who played all year, but he certainly is a guy that you could consider one of the top goalies in the conference, you know, even going into next year.
Yeah. Going into this year, I thought he was the most talented goalie in the CCHA. Like, to play that big and that fast, it's so rare. It's just so rare. And obviously, I don't think he's probably had the year that he's wanted to. And part of it's just because Christian Stover was so good and he gave him no choice, right? But Bowling Green is fine in goal, assuming nothing changes. So,
absolutely. Let's move on to the other semifinal guys, and it was Bemidji State going into Mankato, a place they've gone a number of times and even won. Not the case this time. I kind of felt like the same way with the Beavers. They needed to score first to really kind of maybe take the edge off there, and they weren't able to do so, obviously, in a 4-0 loss. But Jared, this game, it was closer than four, clearly. Then, you know, the Beavers were in it early. Actually, the second period, I think, pretty clearly outplayed the Mavericks, but weren't able to capitalize, thanks in part to Alex Tracy, the player of the year in the conference there, and you know, has to be one of the favorites or to be a Hobey Baker finalist here. But Jared, what's your thought on the Beavers' final game of the year?
Yeah, I think as the season went on, it became a glaring issue of how they were starting games. It happened in Augustana too. There'd be maybe a 5-8 stretch where they'd kind of tread water, and then wheels would come off a little bit at the end of the first period, and then Scholl would have to make some pretty ridiculous saves. I think, Trent, you would probably agree with that from that three-gamer in Sioux Falls, that Augustana, a not a very good first period team, controlled all three of those first periods against Bemidji State. And that was the case in Mankato the week before. It was the case in one of the two games against Bowling Green the week before. For some reason, it took them a bit to get going, and you don't get that kind of leeway when you play this kind of Minnesota State team. That was the toughest part, I think, for Bemidji State. It was, you know, you're basically starting the game down 1-0 if you're starting it in the second period. Zach Kranick, what a playoff run he's having. Holy cow. I mean, one goal in the regular season, and he's got 5 in the postseason.
Wow.
Shout out to Cam from Chatton Mavericks. He's calling him Mr. – they're dubbing him Mr. March. Luke Strand agrees. That was one of my favorite quotes from the presser after the game, was how much they just kind of giggled when they called him Mr. March. So that's impressive. But, yeah, Perry, you were right. Second period, pretty much all Beavs for – I'd say at least 15, 20 minutes, and then, you know, a bad turnover in the neutral zone. Isley gets a shot. Scholl makes a big save, comes right back to Isley, pretty much the same spot, and he scores. And, you know, Territory called it the backbreaker, certainly felt like it. Third period, kind of the same thing. Bemidji State's pushing. They get a couple power plays, and it's time to start getting aggressive with about 10 minutes left, and that's when leads to an Isley 2-on-0 with Rhett Pitlick. Good luck, Matthias. And from there it was over. I mean, Bemidji State has not scored more than one time in all four games against Minnesota State this season, and they needed to score 3 on Alex Tracy, who had never given up more than 3 in any collegiate game this season. So, yeah, tough. But Minnesota State, right? They're playing like a team that's so committed to doing the things they're good at, and that's what makes them, I think, the most dangerous version of them, is they're playing like they're not thinking, and that's awesome. Like, it's really, really impressive to watch. For someone like I hear Territory talk about teams that are really good at cutting the ice in half, and Minnesota State is playing in a way that's really easy to visualize it. And it's because I think it's because of Alex Tracy, the way that they're able to do this. Like, if you can kind of clog up the neutral zone and use the speed of your forwards to force the play to one side, and your defensemen can play really aggressive knowing that Alex Tracy is behind them, what an advantage. And you add in just an absolute game breaker like Rhett Pitlick and another one like Evan Murr, and the support pieces kind of like, you know, Luigi Benincasa and Brian Karavis and a Campbell Psychos. Like, there's so much support to this the stars on that team. And it's just a really, really interesting mix of players. And when they're all playing and they're all rowing in that same direction, it's fun to watch. And it's really, really tough to stop. And that's what makes this Friday's game against St. Thomas really, really intriguing. And I just really wish it was for an NCAA tournament bid, because it would, and it's to nobody's fault. Like, it's just the NCAA's fault, but you know, it's just a bummer, because this would have been an awesome, awesome, awesome Mason Cup championship for with that on the line for both teams.
True, true. Trent, what do you think about that one, the semifinal there?
I don't think it's going to take away that much from the game, by the way.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, to be honest, when I was watching, I just felt like Bemidji didn't have any really – like, there were so few and far between. I think maybe in the second period there was a pretty good scoring chance, but they really didn't have a lot of high-danger chances in this game, and that's just a credit to kind of what Minnesota State's been doing. They don't – they steer everything to the boards. They give up nothing in the middle of the ice. I mean, against Augustana, it was kind of the same way. Even in the game that Augustana outplayed them and lost, there weren't that many great scoring chances that Augustana had. And the night before was kind of the same way too. I think, you know, maybe neither team really had much in the first period that first night. But, yeah, it's just – They're committed to playing a certain style of team defense that honestly is making Alex Tracy's life just so easy. And the execution that you're seeing from them defensively is easily, you know, it's right up there with the best in this league. And Evan Murr, who is very offensive minded, he was defensive player of the year. He has evolved a defensive side to his game. You notice that too. Campbell Sykos is huge on the defensive side. And then Luke Ashton. I think Luke Ashton is equally as important in that role. I don't know. I really like this Minnesota State team. You know, especially going into the NCAA tournament, I think teams are, you know, you're very prone to overlook this team, and which is funny to say it's a 26 win team, but they're going a little under the radar in a lot of ways. I don't know that nationally they're being talked about quite enough as they probably should be. Maybe because they're lower on the pairwise, you know, I think their non-conference schedule shows that they're you know, very capable team though. I you know, without really repeating a lot of what Jared said, because you know, a lot of my takeaways were generally like Bemidji played pretty solid in the second and third periods. That first period was not pretty. I thought their second period was solid, was their best period. And they, you know, it's funny because they ended up out shooting them in the second period. And then still, you know, you're down 2-0. And that is literally what every team I feel like runs into with Minnesota State this year. It's a tough – it was a fun run for the Beavs. And it was an interesting team. This is the first time they were shut out all season, mm-hmm. which is just a fascinating stat when you consider what this – how, you know, maybe some of the inconsistencies you've seen from this team.
I mean, they were horrible offensively in the second.
Yeah.
Like, it's
and amazing. They got shut out.
Yeah,
in the semifinal, ran into a little bit of a brick wall, I think, with this Minnesota State team. I wanted to believe. There's part of me pulling for the Beavs in this game, but at the same time, Minnesota State is just on. They're really playing at a pretty impressive level right now, which, like Jared said, I think sets up well for a really good championship. Two teams that are just, you know, riding a collision course of kind of putting everything together at the same time. And then, you know, I know the stakes aren't as high as they could be, but this is still should be a really good game if we see both these teams best.
I want to piggyback off something you said too about like how the defensemen make life on Alex Tracy, like 100% true. It's also what the most impressive part about it is they do it without packing it in. Like they're not sitting there saying we're going to put
four guys in the box and just sticks. Nobody gets through the middle of the ice. Like,
yeah.
Northern started doing that a little bit in those games where they'd get outshot, you know, 3-1, 4-1, because they didn't really have a choice. And they were actually pretty effective at doing so. Mankato is like, it's almost the opposite. They're so aggressive defensively because they can be. And one, they can do it because Tracy's behind him and he makes everything look routine this year. But I think the most impressive part about it is they are good at executing while being, you know, that aggressive. It's a lot like Michigan Tech last year when they just never made a mistake on a breakout. And you kind of see the same trends happening with Minnesota State. Is you have this super aggressive forecheck and a forecheck that turns over a ton of pucks. And that's Bemidji State's bread and butter, has been for 25 years. And Minnesota State never fumbled a pass on a breakout. They made tape-to-tape passes, the right decisions. They spread out Bemidji State all over the ice. Bemidji State wants to cut you into one half of the ice. Minnesota State, because of their speed and their aggressiveness with their breakout, they were able to, you know, not only – they were able to turn defensive situations into offensive transitions. And when you mix in how good they are in the neutral zone too, it's so much for any team to handle. And when you look at, like, this team going into an NCAA tournament, every single game they're going to have the best goalie on the ice. A lot of games they're going to have, you know, against a lot of teams, they might have the best player on the ice in Rhett Pitlick. Like, they're going to be an older team than any team they play in that first round. Like, they're going to be a more physical team, a more experienced team. And how all of those intangibles at some point can outweigh talent and outweigh the 14, 15 first over, you know, first round picks or NHL draft picks on a roster. But, you know, it's to the point now where Minnesota State probably doesn't have to play a perfect game to upset a one seed in the NCAA tournament. That's how good they are. And I don't think that was the case last year with Michigan Tech. Like, you know, it's nothing against Michigan Tech. It's just Boston College was that good. So,
yeah,
that wasn't meant as a slight. Misfits, please do not kill me.
No, I mean, and it's true. And even then, the Tech had their opportunities.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, so
against BC.
We also talk about special teams. And I mean, Jared, you and I both know special teams played a huge role last weekend in Sioux Falls. You know, they're, for the most part, this Minnesota State team, perfect on the kill in the playoffs. They haven't scored a power play goal. And so, like, you're talking about, like, and they were fairly reliant on the power play in the regular season just because they, you know, they had so many guys who when they played Augustana, I loved their power play. I thought their power play was, like, absolutely humming. I was like, who can stop this power play at times when you watch it? Like, it was like, it felt that way. They hem teams in so well, but they haven't had many chances on the power play, but they haven't needed to rely on special teams in the playoffs, which is another testament too that I think we saw this throughout the second half of the season. We started seeing that Minnesota State can win games in a variety of different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think now, you know, you're seeing that, like, Alex Tracy can steal a game one night. There are some nights where it looks like Alex Tracy stole that game, and it didn't matter because the defense gave up like two chances in front of the net. You know what I mean? And so I think they're this is a really, really, like I said, and I don't want to like continue to say the same thing, but I'm looking at this Minnesota State team in a couple weeks, in a week, you know, like what are we going to see from this team when they go on the road? And I'm really curious to see who they match up against when they do get that bid.
Gophers.
I'm assuming it'll be like a one or a two seed.
They played the Gophers. We'll, it'd be so fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting too, because it's got like look at the CCHA last year. I think their top pairwise team that obviously got the auto bid was Michigan Tech. And it was like, they were maybe 25th. 26, like they were, and they were the lowest ranked team. In the pairwise that made the tournament, and you know, I thought Michigan Tech held its own for, you know, 48, 50 minutes. You got to the end there and it got a little ugly. But it was a good game up until that point. And I don't know, though. This is a vastly different situation for this league going into the NCAA tournament. You know, I suppose we could go ahead and talk about that because we know they're going to be the ones. So,
yeah, it's true.
I think one other thing to say on top of that, too, is the thing that makes them so interesting to me is how comfortable they are trying to win a 1-0 or a 2-1 game. Like, mm-hmm. And that's probably what you're going to have to do if you play a 1 seed. Like, you know, how many one seeds are you going to score 5 times on? Like, it's not as possible. So Alex Tracy, I don't know, doesn't he have like 5 or 6 wins this year when he gives up 2 or less goals? Like, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. And it's a team that has no discomfort in a 1-goal game or 1-0 going into the third period. We got to hold on to this lead to win. It's a team that's proven to do that.
Jared says Gophers, like, if that game happens, if you're a Gopher fan, like, you've got to be the, like, that you don't want that matchup at all.
No, why would you? And you have to play Red Pit, like, too.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break and come back. We'll talk about the championship, we'll talk about some awards, and we'll get into any more talk on the NCAAs for Minnesota State here on the CCHA show.
Passion, talent, development. NCAA hockey offers all that, and its players graduate at a 93% rate. Trevor Zegras.
And they score on the lacrosse move.
Jake Gensel.
Gensel banks it towards the goal. He scores.
Kale McCarr.
He scores.
Stars on campus before the NHL stage. Whether you're a fan or a player, nothing compares to college hockey.
My goodness.
Visit collegehockeyinc.com and follow at College Hockey.
All right, back here with Jared and Trent. Guys, Mavericks and Tommy's here on Friday night in Mankato. Should be, obviously a packed house, big crowd. We've seen it a couple years ago when last time the Mavericks hosted. Even last year, Bemidji is one of the better atmospheres, I'm sure, that has been up in that barn. And we can expect more of that there. We have everything college hockey will be there. We have Pat Micheletti and Ben Holden on the call on Midco. So it should be all the stars will be out, I guess you could say, here as far as Midwest hockey and the CCHA goes. But Jared, we'll start with you here on just the game itself and what you're expecting.
I'm expecting an absolute war. It's so hard to pick a winner. The wrinkle in it of this game, you know, I think meaning a little bit more for St. Thomas is real, makes it even tougher. You know, it's interesting, right? Because, like, I think with the Rhett Pitlick edition, if, you know, everybody could get a do-over on the preseason ballots, I think these are probably the top two teams. I don't know if Minnesota State jumps from, like, what, 3 or 4 to 1 with just Rhett Pitlick from, like, the coaches' poll perspective, but pretty sure they hop Bemidji State. And, so this is, I mean, the two best teams on paper. They're the two best teams, in how they played this year. And kind of some immovable unstoppable forces meet immovable objects, like, you know, which the goalie battle in this game,
right, yeah.
Kyle and Tracy, the star power in this game with Wallen and Malmquist against Pitlick and Isley. And yeah, just a fun game. I think I'd take the Tommies to win a close one. I don't know, like, does Luke Ashton play? Like, he's kind of battling a little bit of a lingering injury. He's been slotted as their extra skater too. So, you know, do you play him? Alex Tracy got banged up with like 13 seconds left on Saturday night against Bemidji. And if he's, you know, a little sore, like, do you play him? You know, like, that's a very valid question. If you're a team that thinks it can win the national championship, why risk losing a player that can help you for that game, you know, for a spot that you've already locked up? But at the same time, you're also playing for a championship, and these guys are so competitive. And do you want to wait 2 weeks before you play another, you know, another game at this time of year, breaking out of a rhythm? Like, how important is that to some players? So all of those things are what Minnesota State has to consider this week. And I think when the objective for St. Thomas is go end the season on the highest possible note that that team could end on, you know, it's a team that I think is playing even, you know, more attached to their systems than even Minnesota State is. And I like the Tommies just a little bit more than the Mavericks this weekend. And it's tough because I think St. Thomas would have been, again, another really, really, really good representative for the CCHA and the NCAA tournament. I mean, that would have been a really, really interesting team for a lot of one seeds to match up with. And but it will also, again, probably a much different draw, too, than Mankato would have gotten. Right? I mean, they'd be going out, would they probably be going out east with being over the 16 overall and playing either, or maybe to Toledo? If
they wouldn't get preference.
Right. So, that, you know, that was something that was also worth considering. But again, like maybe the Tommies play the Gophers and that would be fun again. So, yeah, I don't know. That's all I got.
Yeah, you have to look at who the Atlantic is sending also. But, yeah, you're right.
I think it'll be Holy Cross, right? Or Bentley?
Bentley and Holy Cross are in the championship.
Yeah.
Trent, what do you think about the final coming up here?
I think what's great about this game, and I know the stakes are what they are, just considering the fact that the Tommies, and I just saw this like a couple weeks ago because they were here for the Summit League tournament, and the Tommies made it to the championship. And we already knew. We already knew going in that that Nebraska Omaha was going dancing, but it didn't matter. Nebraska Omaha went out and absolutely smothered them, and it was like they just kind of did what they've been doing the whole tournament. I don't know that I see it playing out the same way though, because this Tommy's team on the ice is different, and by that I mean. This junior class, this senior class with Liam Malmquist and others, this is their Super Bowl. This is their national championship. They know there will be no more hockey. And I think that we're going to see a fire in this team. I don't know. I still think it's a low-scoring game. My mind keeps going back to the series that I watched last year, and that was a completely different team, and this is totally different situations, but St. Thomas comes away with a point on a Friday night in Mendota Heights, and then they go on the road to Mankato the next night. I mean, it was just a rock star environment, and Aaron Trotter played out of his mind, comes away with a 3-2 win. I see a similar sort of game. St. Thomas goes in and kind of steals one in a way. We're going to see Jake Seibel at this time, but I think we all three of us know you can flip a coin with those two because they're both just fantastic netminders. Jake Seibel hasn't lost still. I mean, we can't overlook that. I think it's been since like November. He has not lost. I like the Tommies a lot in this game. I mean, I don't know what it is. There's an inkling I have where I feel like this is a game that St. Thomas rises to a little bit. It just, there's something about it too, with like knowing the fact that Minnesota State doesn't really, you know, they know their future. Like if you run into a situation where like you clearly are just getting hammered on the boards and like you got guys maybe getting banged up, like what do you pull them? I mean, you already know you have that bid. Like
it's human nature.
I think you don't want to risk anything. Yeah. And you know, of course, I'm going to pick the Tommies when I do the predictions this week on the sole basis that I picked them first in this conference and I want to be right.
Wow.
And I got to stick with that. So I like the Tommies in this game. I still think it's going to be a really good game. And it would not surprise me in the slightest if Minnesota State wins this. I mean, you got to remember, though, like Minnesota State 9-0-1 in their last 10. Their last loss was to St. Thomas in a series that St. Thomas won. I don't know. I think the Tommies kind of got their number right now. I love the experience that they have. These two teams next season, look out. They're going to be a lot of fun next year too. When you look at kind of what they've got coming in and, you know, St. Thomas, so many guys stepping. I mean, that junior class is going to all be seniors next year, and that's a loaded junior class. you know, they're going to lose Liam Malmquist next year, but still, like, I'm really looking forward to what these two teams look like next year too, because both of them have really good recruiting classes coming in too.
Yeah, Mankato has more turnover, right? They lose more seniors,
yeah,
grad,
which also I think is why their recruiting classes ranked higher.
Yeah.
Neutral zone.
It's a lot based on quantity over
quality.
Their quality is still really good, and but.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, at the same point, right? Like, it's both teams are bringing back studs. Like, Tracy should come back.
Yep.
Isley should come back. Obviously, Malmquist, Cooper Gay.
Trotter.
Cheslock, if he doesn't sign, right? Like, these are all
yep.
These are all guys that are going to come back. And it's kind of across the board.
Receiving.
Like, a lot of the top four teams.
He's a junior.
Outside.
Is he?
I think so.
Outside of Michigan Tech, who was like, weren't they the youngest team in the CCHA this year? Well, technically Northern, but like those top, a lot of the top four teams, like they're losing a lot of seniors, but with the recruiting class they bring in, I mean, we could see a ton of shakeup. Is Minnesota State or St. Thomas going to fall out of the top four? No, but St. Thomas can move up to one. Minnesota State can move down. Maybe Bowling Green moves down to the bottom four. Team moves up, like Michigan Tech gets a year older, they move up, right? Like I think we're going to see even more reshuffling next year with a lot of the depth and kind of, you know, those kind of pieces.
Yeah, it's you know, Jared, it's so hard to gauge this on
so hard.
March
and,
well, 16th
and,
you
know, we haven't
because
even
once
portal.
I was going to say, once March 30th hits, we'll have a good idea of what that turnover looks like. I mean, right now you look at you know, a program like Ferris State, which is, you know, they're having a coaching change.
Yeah.
And they only have, I think, two recruits on their upcoming recruiting class. And but, like, you know, a coaching change is going to prompt a lot of guys to probably look elsewhere. And we'll see. We'll see kind of what that all entails. But
right. At the same time, if it's another collegiate coach, maybe of the Canisius ilk, then he could bring some players over from the previous school to Ferris.
Yeah.
Good point.
There's that whole element too.
Yeah.
Let's get into some postseason awards, what you guys thought of the coaches voting, and anything that you may differ on. Let's just start with the rookie, all rookie team. There's some good representation there, obviously from Michigan Tech. Three players on it from the Huskies. In Janssen, Morrell, and Brown, Issa Parekh from Bemidji State, Jacob Altrichter from Northern, and then the goaltender was Rourke Appleby from Lake Superior State. Trent, initial thoughts there?
Yeah, I think the right guy got Rookie of the Year personally.
Okay.
I mean, Logan Morrell was tremendous this year, and I like a lot of these rookies too. Interested to see. I will say this, and I don't want to like sound like a, you know, a homer or, you know, I just look at this from, I'm probably will. I really liked Augie's rookie class. Their mm-hmm. freshman class, they just didn't play enough conference games, and you know, it's ultimately award based on how you perform in conference play. But this freshman class for Augustana, I mean, they had a lot of rookie of the weeks this year in the CCHA. You know, guys like Nase Langus. I mean, he talk about an evolution from start to finish in the season. I mean, he was their top rookie, 16 points.
Del Greco.
I'm expecting Joey Del Greco, the speed and ability, you know, on the penalty kill and on the power play. Both of those guys were just tremendous. Tyler Hennen is another Augustana rookie that I'm sure he didn't get a lot of consideration for this all rookie team or anything. He's I don't know if you guys know this, but he, a week before the freshman got there, he found out he was going to be playing college hockey, and he played 1 year juniors. And if you've seen the guy, he's not the biggest. He's definitely got a lot to grow into. An offseason is going to do a guy like Tyler Hennen wonders, but the fact that he made he was an everyday player for this team. And I think throughout the whole second half of the season. And part of the first half, you know, obviously he had a pretty scary injury in an exhibition game against the NTDP, or I think in November. He really, though, evolved, too, as the season went on. I really like the way they had 14 guys in double-figure points this season. They had four freshmen among those 14. They got a lot to look forward to with that rookie class. But, yeah, this is, you know, Logan Morrell making the team and being the player of the year was more than warranted. I really like Elias Johnson was, right? Yeah. Sorry. Kind of mixed up. Tech had a great rookie class too, though. That's another thing too. I mean, their freshmen were tremendous. They had three guys on that freshman team, right? Is that right?
Yep, three.
Yeah. That was with
Brown.
And I'll let Jared talk more about Issa Parekh, but he stood out so much in that Augustana series, and I was really impressed with him. Shout out to Rourke Appleby too. Not a tough choice there for goalies. It was clearly him. He saw all those minutes. He was their starter for, you know, the majority of the season, and I thought he held his own as for a freshman. He's got a bright future ahead of him too.
I was a little surprised Issa Parekh wasn't a rookie of the year finalist, but again, Logan Morrell would have been my pick to win it. I think I said that on THG. There's nothing wrong with the, you know, the all rookie team. Jakob Ulrichter, again, that's another one that stood out to me at times this year. Another one where maybe on the deeper team, he's not playing those first line minutes too, but, you know, at the same time, he played those first line minutes and he had the points that he did and he had the production that he did. And wherever he is in the rest of his hockey career, you know, a season like that can give you a lot of confidence in terms of just becoming the player that you want to be. And I think that's the case for a lot of the freshmen on this list. You know, Issa Parekh didn't have the greatest start to the year, but he turned into a true top pair defenseman in this league in a lot of the same ways that I think Evan Murr matured last year. And what did we see Evan Murr do this year? He really added that defensive part of the game to really strengthen it on being a two-way forward. And that's what I kind of see Issa Parekh evolving into if he's able to get a little bit stronger and just a little bit heavier. You know, Logan Morrell, I think at times this year we saw, you know, he was great on faceoffs. He was great on the power play, but structurally maybe was a little slow in the defensive zone, but there were also times where he made such a difference. And so it's just taking that next step. And that's kind of what we want to see. Rourke Appleby, another one, you know, at times this year, he stopped 50 shots, backstop Lake State to like a 3-1 win. And there were times where maybe the save percentage wasn't what he wanted it to be at. But, I think the really fun part is a lot of these guys seem like guys that are going to stick around and you're going to see that maturation process as the years go on. That's really the fun part.
Yeah. Morrell seemed a little bit like the Brody Waters of the year prior. And now Waters jumped into the second team with all those power play goals he scored. Getting to the second team, we have Luke Mobley from Augustana, Ryan O'Hara and Brody Waters from Bowling Green, Chase Foley and Travis Shouty from St. Thomas and Ferris State, respectively, and then Josh Kotai, the second-team goaltender there. Jared, what do you think about that group?
I was very happy Chase Foley got recognition. Holy Chase Foley is another one. I said it to Luke Strand on Saturday in the presser. Is like, I watch Campbell Psychos play, and I never see him make a mistake. And Chase Foley is the exact same way. He plays the smartest hockey ever, and it doesn't translate into the most points. Like, he's not, if you just look at a box score, his name doesn't pop up every game, you know, like some of his teammates, especially his forward teammates too. But watching the games, Chase Foley is one of St. Thomas's best players, and I'm so happy everybody else sees that too, because Chase Foley he deserves some recognition for what he did this year. Great to see Luke Mobley on that list. Another guy too, where He's not your prototypical point per game offensive driving forward, but when you watch him play in the areas he impacts the game, you know, you have a guy that can go out there and take three times as many faceoffs as anybody else on your team. That's huge, right? I think, you know, we'll probably talk forward, you know, defensive forward of the year stuff, or, mm-hmm. you know, defensive defenseman of the year. But Saratori's explanation of those awards in how he picks them were like, you know, I don't know if they make sense in terms of what the award is, but it does serve a purpose in that it is like the clutch award. It's the area, it's the award given to the players, you know, the defenseman and the forward who show up in the most clutch situations and situations that often don't show up on a stat sheet, you know. And Luke Mobley is another one of those players, like a Jackson Juddinger or a Chase Pietola, where, yeah, he doesn't have the, you know, gaudy point total of a Rhett Pitlick, but in all areas of the game, he is just as important. So, and then Kotai, what a season. No, I don't think there was really any debate for that one. And I forgot the rest of the names you said. So
that's okay. Trent.
Yeah. Ryan O'Hara was, I think, deserving of being on that list too. And Brody Waters. I mean, I think both those guys from Bowling Green were so huge. Brody Waters, just a absolute unit on the power play. And I'm with Jared. Chase Foley is just tremendous. And you got to look, too. They had a lot of power play success this season, and Chase Foley had a lot to do with that. They're not known. St. Thomas isn't known for being a team where their defensemen really, really engage in the offensive side of play a lot. They're so, you know, in that system, they're very much kind of stay-at-home defensemen in a lot of ways. They don't give up a lot of odd man rushes because of that. I think that for him to have the season he did, a lot of it was taking so much advantage on the power play. He was part of that top unit and was just, it still is. I mean, you know, they're still playing this weekend, but he's fantastic. And I don't know that I've really got the chance to talk a ton about Luke Mobley. We've talked about Josh Kotai a lot. Obviously he's deserving of that. And I think it's great. You know, Luke Mobley led the team in scoring this year, led the team in scoring last year. He's going to leave as they're the kind of guy that they want to recruit to Augustana. You just see his goal scoring prowess. He's one of those guys that I'm going to miss being able to see night in and night out at Augustana, and truly, you know, I think he's got some chances here to make a name at the pro ranks. He's going to play for the Heartlanders in the ECHL. Shout out to Jared for the tip. He was scouring the ECHL transaction log, sent it my way. He hits the refresh button every 15 minutes, which I appreciate. That's what a good reporter does, Jared. And I appreciate you pointing that out for me. No, but
what the hell?
I think it's cool though for you guys. You guys are Wild fans, and he's in the Wild system now, so that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I'll see him in 8 years. Awesome.
On a Thursday night game when they're a 2-40 team.
All right, well, we're going into a Stanley Cup window. All right.
I'm a North Stars fan. We're going to move on to the
first team.
But not a Dallas Stars fan, for obvious reasons. Let's move on to the first team. A couple of St. Thomas forwards flanking Liam Malmquist and Lucas Wallen, flanking Rhett Pitlick there on the all-CCHA first team forward list. And then Evan Murr and Chase Pietola, the defenseman. And then Alex Tracy, of course, the first team goaltender. Trent, thoughts on that?
Yeah, group? Chase Pietola. You know, I've said my piece on him before.
Yep.
And he's to me the best defenseman in this league, and you know, more than deserving of it. Yep. And he won the award. You know, he's very deserving of that, I think, too. But Evan Murr, I mean, just I really feel like he evolved into another player this year too. He truly is like an all-around defenseman now. I mean, he already showed the scoring ability, but he is, he's adapted a side to his game where it makes it tough, especially when you consider the fact that, you know, he's not alone on that blue line. They've got so many pieces. But yeah, then Liam Almquist, what a year he had. Just a tremendous season for St. Thomas. One of the best forwards in this league and very deserving. We've talked enough about Rhett Pitlick. Super deserving of being on that list too. And then, you know, you talk about having a guy like Lucas Wallen on that team too. That guy can score from anywhere too. And then, of course, Alex Tracy. I thought, when the second team was out already, I'd basically penciled in the first team. I kind of had an idea of exactly who it was. And so a lot of this was pretty elementary in a lot of ways. But, yeah, no, I think all those guys are you know, fantastic options. Four Minnesota guys on the first team, too.
Makes a lot of sense. I mean, how many are from Minnesota schools, right?
Oh, yeah. Minnesota State had three guys for sure. Two St. Thomas guys.
Yeah. And then Michigan Tech had a Michigan. And yeah, and then Tracy's from Chicago. Jared, what do you think about the first team there? You can roll that into your thoughts on Judding for the defensive forward as well.
I don't have much to add on the.
That's fine. I mean, let's jump right in then.
We talked about every single one of those players. So
let's talk about Jutz, Jared.
Super.
Here he goes.
That I don't get to watch Jackson Judding play hockey anymore.
That's tough.
That is the worst part about this season ending is, yeah, he was awesome, but, yeah, and deserving of that award too, right? I mean, nobody takes more faceoffs than Jackson Judding, and nobody wins more big faceoffs. And the way he impacts the game in all three zones were. It was impressive in the 3 years he was here. And, yeah, a kind of a cool send-off he gave to on Saturday night. You know, he got a little emotional talking about kind of what it meant to play at Bemidji State and kind of talking about a little bit of the struggles he went through at Colorado College in his first 2 years in college. And so, yeah, you know, kind of a nice way to send off a really, really good captain and a really important piece of this program. So that was fun. So good to see him get some recognition in a year where Bemidji State obviously didn't end up where they want to be and kind of went through a lot more struggles than they anticipated. So obviously I don't think it was the year that Jackson Judding thought he'd have from a team standpoint, but, you know, to kind of finish it off with getting that recognition, I'm sure it doesn't hurt either. So, yeah, that was cool.
I mean, a McNaughton Cup last year, that was kind of a dream season last year for the Beavers. And as good as you thought they might be this year, you couldn't maybe expect that exact same thing to happen again.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's, you know, the losses in Kyle Loft and Eric Polkamp and Leighton Rowe loomed so much bigger than I think everybody in the program thought they would. Yeah, I think it's just, you know, the tough part for the guys who are graduating is three out of the 4 years or 5 years for some of them, they were one game away from going to the NCAA tournament. And that's a tough pill to swallow. And two of those games, they were one goal away. You know, in total, you think of how many games and how many periods you end up playing in college and you end up, what, a total of five goals away from making three NCAA tournaments. I mean, that's a really, really tough pill to swallow. And
yeah.
But you know what? It's something that just happens in sports, and it's the way it is.
Trent, Jutz?
Yeah, no, I love Jackson Judding. maybe even as much as Tom Serratore does, honestly.
Wow.
I don't.
That can't be true.
What Jared and I we were talking about that because I think there's a lot of things about Judding that remind me when I hear Tom Serratore talk about Jackson Judding, you could hear how much he means to both the coach and obviously the program. I mean, it really does. And Augustana has a similar kid, because when you ask Garrett Rabwin anything about Hunter Bischoff, you're going to hear similar sentiments. And Hunter Bischoff, likely your captain in waiting at Augustana. I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb and say that's probably the case. Very, very similar in terms of that and kind of what they mean to a coach. I mean, Judding was a force. To be quite honest, Judding may have been the difference in the series against Augustana. That's where the margins really were.
100%. 100%.
Yeah, there were two goals in that series that led directly to goals. One was a shorthanded goal. One, I believe, was a power play goal. I mean, they were just immaculately clean faceoffs. And Augustana did well on the dot against him overall. Mm-hmm. There were just times where Bemidji needed a goal, and Jackson Judding gave a clean faceoff win, and they scored right off of it. So he was a problem for Augustana in that series. And I was really interested to see how, you know, I think Minnesota State probably takes that into consideration. And you probably, you know, going into practice, I think a lot of what you're doing in your faceoff detail is, you know, countering what a clean faceoff win in a lot of ways. So he draws a lot of attention, and I think he's more than deserving of that award.
If you want like a really good account of how much Jackson Judding means to any team, like a player like that, I recommend going to the post-game press conference from Saturday and listening to Luke Strand's comments. They had an extended chat in the handshake line, and I kind of saw it, and I just asked Strand, I was like, hey, what was that about? Like, you know, is it just like a relief that you don't have to play him anymore? And you told him, and he's like, yeah, like kind of. Like, that's kind of what it is. And I think Strand said something to the, you know, effect of, like, I've never seen him play a bad hockey game ever. Like, that's how many players, you know, opposing players will a coach say that about? I mean, it's right. You know, that's how he was truly one of the more feared players in this league. And it wasn't for his like outstanding offensive ability or, you know, his imposing size or his game breaking speed. Jackson Judding wasn't a player that was like elite at anything. He was just really good at everything. And that's, I think players like that are so feared in this league. You know, obviously like a Rhett Pitlick and what he can do offensively is feared, but if you're Minnesota State, like you're playing Minnesota State, you're more fearful of a kid like Evan Murr because of everything he can do that is so good. You know, if you can find a way to slow down and gap Rhett Pitlick, you kind of take away a lot of his game where you force him to do things he isn't as necessarily comfortable in doing. But it's the players that feel comfortable in all situations and can thrive in those that are truly the more feared players in college hockey, especially in the CCHA. That is, you know, games in the CCHA take a life of their own. They're super physical. They can be high scoring, low scoring, the penalties or no penalties. Like it's just different. Every single night in this league is different, and it's just a little bit different than it is in other conferences. And when you have players that can just do everything well, that's, I think, truly the more feared players in this league.
No, that definitely makes sense what you're saying about Judding there. And I'm sure every coach in the league recognizes that when going up against him there. Guys, we have, obviously the Mason Cup Championship coming up Friday. The cup will be out for people to check in on in the lobby of the Mayo there. The Mayo, it's got a longer name than that. I think it was called the Mayo.
Mayo Clinic. Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's like the longest name.
Mayo Clinic Health System Event Center.
Thank you. And then I believe they're going to be selling the Mason Cup pucks there as well near the trophy. So if you want to get yourself a Mason Cup puck, stop by the ticket to get a photo with the Mason Cup. That might even draw Jared to drive down, I'm sure.
No.
Jared saw it last year. I remember I actually saw Jared at the
Perry. Just grab us one. Come on.
Maybe. Can you, I'll go to a Twins game with you, Perry, if you grab me a Mason Cup.
All right. I mean, that's, you can still go to a Twins game with me. even if I don't, but maybe I will anyway. All right. Great, guys. Before we get out of here, we somehow talked to semifinals and final and awards and took us an hour. So that's pretty good. Let's get to plugging. What do you guys, take some vacation probably? You got some spring sports you're working on, or I'm sure you'll be watching on Friday. Jared?
Yeah, I'll watch, obviously, on Friday. I'll plug some stuff. last week I did a story that took me like 60 hours to write.
Yeah.
79 minutes in Mankato. If you're going to the Mason Cup game and you want to read about truly one of the craziest nights in the history of hockey, please go read that story. It's my favorite story I've ever written. So please, please read that story. I'm begging. It's pinned on my Twitter page. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't remember which child on Twitter put this out, but if you are filling out an NCAA bracket, there's like a CCHA group that's on Twitter. I don't know. I can't remember who put it on Twitter, but
CCHA, one of the CCHA children.
Yeah. One of the CCHA disciples put it on the bird. So, go join that. I'm sorry that I can't remember which one of you posted it.
Trent,
I hate to do this. But yes, go read Jared's story.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what kind of awards he can win for this, but he probably deserves another one for this. No, it's a really, really, really good piece, and it's a little trip down memory lane. Jared did a great job with it. I sent it to so many people who probably don't even care, and I was like, just read this. Like, I have a friend who's kind of getting into college hockey now. He's been a big hockey fan, one of my best friends. But he's kind of getting into college hockey. I was like, read this. And he was just like, okay, I will. And then he texts me later. He goes, what the hell was that? And I was like, yeah, it was a wild night that I actually have only lived in hindsight. I don't know if you guys caught it too. The Minnesota State broadcast. I know Jared probably didn't, but Perry, I don't know if you saw it. The Minnesota State broadcast in one of the intermissions had a little mini documentary about that night.
Yeah, I watched that it. I watched it. Cool.
They put it on their YouTube, the Minnesota State YouTube, too. It was great. Really well done. Really.
I loved it. Yeah. I thought it was fantastically edited.
That was 22, right?
Yep.
What date? What was the date of that, Jared? Do you remember? Or do you have it written somewhere?
I know the date of the game. I don't remember when the date of the video came out.
No, the game.
March 19th, 2022.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I remember when that happened, obviously. I was at RPI, and our season was over. We had lost to Harvard in three games, so it was exciting. It was a double overtime win in game two for the Engineers. They lost in overtime in game one. They won in double overtime in game two to send it to a game three against Harvard. We were pumped up. I remember very well, actually. It was the following weekend, and I remember sitting there, and I'm like, are you seeing what's going on over out west? And I was like, man, I'm glad I'm not dealing with that right now. And then a year later,
that guy's my boss.
Yeah. Because I had no intention, obviously, then. There's nothing to foresee, but it's very funny to think about now when people are like, hey, do you remember when this happened? I was like, yeah, it wasn't my problem. No, I'm
just... shout out Don, too.
Yeah.
Oh my God. His quotes in that. I texted Jared as I was reading it because I was like, Don's quotes in this are absolute gold. It was like,
everybody, you know, say a prayer for Don this week. He said the Mayo Clinic Health System Event Center has been a house of horrors to him in his
time. Well, yeah. I mean, you have the tech game as well. Yeah.
So everybody say a prayer for Don as he makes a trip back to Mankato this weekend.
This is nothing new for him, I don't think. I believe it was a similar situation during his coaching career, too. I did an Augustana season wrap, too. You guys are welcome to read that.
Go read that.
Sioux Falls Live. I did two stories. I talked with Garrett last week on my birthday, on Wednesday. He took an hour and a half out of my birthday.
That's huge.
I know. It was just like, I was like, what are we doing here, man? No, it was great. I got a lot of good stuff. We talked about the season, and then we talked about kind of looking ahead. Got his take on a lot of different issues and stuff that coaches are facing in college hockey and what he thinks about the CHL and the transfer portal and how it impacts his team and whatnot. So I chatted with him about that. And if you're an Augustana fan, I talked with the wrestling coach this week. They had a national champion for the first time in 15 years. And then they had a very unique situation with a swimmer who won a national champion who also competed in the high jump on the same day at the national championships. And so I'm going to have that story coming up this week. I know, it's pretty incredible. They were both in Indianapolis. They had a festival. Okay. The D2 festival was there this weekend, and it caught a lot of national attention. Her story did. And I was tipped off on it months ago. Shout out to Andy Thurston, the Augustana SID. He told me that this was going to be happening. And sure enough, Bryn had that day on Saturday where she competed. She literally competed a prelim in swimming on Saturday, went to track and field, competed in the high jump, and then came back for the finals in her event swimming 2 days after she'd won a national championship in swimming. So it was a crazy weekend for her. I'm going to hopefully catch up with her today, and I'll have something on that this week. So I'll have plenty of stuff. We got state basketball coming up here too, so I'm staying busy. No vacations for me till probably April.
Okay. All right. Well, that'll do it for the CCHA show. I want to thank everybody for listening all year. These two guys have put together an awesome, we got another, reporter's corner here before we wrap things up, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're figuring out the scheduling right now. Okay. A little tricky with the Mason Cup this week.
Wow. Okay. Great. Great season there. And we'll everyone will be down in Mankato on Friday. So talk to you then.